Welcome to Flying Higher with host Gina Jones, author of Flying Between Heaven and Earth. Each Sunday, Gina highlights the efforts of conscious people that are empowering individuals with the universal knowledge and the spiritual tools to fly toward their highest potential. Now, here's Gina.
Good morning, or good afternoon, depending where in the world you are. This is Flying Higher, and I'm your host, Gina Jones. And we welcome you. We have an exciting show lined up. This evening we have Robert Schwartz with us, who is the author of Courageous Souls. Do we plan our life challenges before birth? Well, that's certainly an interesting question and an interesting concept for many, and I understand that, in fact, we do, and some days I ask myself, what was I thinking? When I get back to the other side, I'm going to have a talk with my higher self. But this evening, we are going to dedicate this time with Robert and explore this amazing book that he has brought forth and the journey that has led him to that and to the amazing people that have courageous souls because they have chosen extraordinary lives that I certainly don't know that I would have chosen consciously, but I'm sure that they have, to further their soul's growth. And so without any more discussion about that, I'd like to bring Robert on. Good evening, Robert. Welcome to Flying Higher on BBS Radio Late Night.
Thank you, Jeannie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes. It's a pleasure to have you with us. I've been quite excited about having you with us on the show and exploring this. This is something that I've brought into my own book in a very small way and certainly in a fictional way in my novel Flying Between Heaven and Earth, and this whole concept that we've actually chosen a lot of the lessons for our lifetime. But your journey is not fiction. This is actually real, and it's an astonishing journey that you sort of came about, I guess, back in 2003. During your own personal exploration, maybe you could just explain to the listeners how you got onto this subject and what led you to this.
Well, in 2003, I was living in Evanston, Illinois, and I was a self-employed marketing and communications consultant, feeling very, very unfulfilled with my work, with my life. I thought often that if I were to fall off the face of the earth, none of my clients would notice. They would simply plug someone else into my role. And I felt that there was a higher calling, a higher purpose to my life, but I had no idea what the higher purpose might be. And I had tried very conventional methods to determine that, you know, going to career counselors, talking with friends and family, asking people what they thought I should do with my life, and invariably they would either say that they didn't know or they would suggest that I do whatever it was that they were doing. And as you can imagine, that wasn't particularly helpful. So One day, an idea came to me that was very different than anything I had ever done before, and that was that maybe I should consult with a psychic medium. And I thought, well, you know, I'll invest an hour of my time and a little bit of money, and if nothing comes from it, then there's no harm done. So I went to see a medium on May 7th of 2003, and I remember that date very well because it was really the date on which my life changed. And in this session with the medium, I spoke with my spirit guides. Now, at that time, I really didn't even have a clear idea of what a spirit guide was. But the medium explained to me that we plan our lives with spirit guides who are highly evolved, non-physical consciousnesses, and that those spirit guides then guide us through our physical incarnations. And through the medium, I was able to talk with mine. One of the things they told me, to my astonishment, was that I had planned many of my greatest challenges before I was born. And so as you were saying in the introduction to the show, I said, well, why in the world did I do that? And they said, you did this for purposes of spiritual growth. And this helped me to completely reframe the challenges in my own life, because when those things had occurred, very often they had seemed to me to be pointless suffering. In fact, I sometimes even had the thought that if I could find a deeper purpose to it, then the suffering would be reduced. But very often I didn't see the deeper purpose. And after I learned from my guides and through the mediums that I had planned many of my greatest challenges, I realized that I was onto something that could really help people to see a much deeper purpose in their life challenges And that's what set me on the road to write this book.
It's interesting. We sort of came to the same place, but in different ways, because I felt like that knowledge and that understanding would help a lot of people understand where they think so many things in their life or they're victims, number one, or that it's just random and chaotic and that they're just wandering through life in a haphazard way and that things just happen to them and that they're just not in control or there's no reason for this. And, of course, a lot of things in our society support that kind of thinking. Whereas I was a flight attendant for so many years, I always say you have to look at things from a higher perspective. You have to sort of step back and look at the bigger picture and look at everything that's going on and then see it from that perspective. And certainly being in communication with your spirit guides could certainly do that. That is not experience I've had personally, but I would certainly like to do that. And I noticed you've recommended several people that you used in your research for your book that you highly recommend, and that is certainly on my list of things to do. So what made you go further with this? You found out for yourself. So how did you find other people to join you in this mission, if you will, of enlightening everybody with this knowledge?
Well, one of the things that happened shortly after my session with the medium is that I was introduced to a woman who has the ability to channel her soul. So I told her that I was thinking of writing a book about how we plan our lives before we're born, and I asked her if I could actually interview her soul, and she agreed to this. We met a total of 5 times for about 15 hours, and in the course of these 15 hours, I asked her soul what was planned and why was it planned, and her soul told me in great detail which challenges were considered, why certain ones were selected, why certain other challenges were not selected, and it was really an extraordinary experience and a confirmation of what my guides had told me in the session with the medium. So with this as the basis for my research, I set about posting messages on the internet trying to find people who had memories of planning their lives. And I was not able to find anyone, and after a number of weeks of looking for people, I just sort of threw up my arms and asked Spirit to help. And the universe did just that, and within a short period of time, 4 mediums contacted me who, not coincidentally, have the exact set of skills that I needed in order to research pre-birth planning. So we have Deb Dabari, who is very skilled at talking with the deceased, and if I was interviewing somebody who had a life challenge that was planned with another person who had returned to spirit, we often worked with Deb to talk to that person and ask them what did they plan and why did they plan it. Gwenna Dietrich is a trance channel, and through her I was able to talk with angels and ask them about why certain people had planned certain challenges. Corby Mitley is actually able to channel other people's souls, and so once again I was able to interview souls directly and ask them what people had planned. And then Stacey Wells has perhaps the most unique ability, and that is that she can actually see and hear the pre-birth planning sessions. So through Stacey, I was able to get the actual conversations that people had with each other when they were planning their lives.
Now, someone listening to this for the first time who may have never even considered this concept is going to say, well, how do you know what they were telling you is true? How do you know you were talking to their soul or to the angels or whoever it was that was being channeled? What confirmation or verification did you have that, in fact, this was even valid?
Well, frequently, the interviewees would confirm that the channeled beings or the mediums knew things about them that they could not have known unless it was real. But more important than that, it really cannot be proven. There's no way for me, as the author of this book, to travel to the other side and, for example, observe a pre-birth planning session. But I think there are different ways of assessing truth. You can assess truth with your mind, but you can also assess truth with your heart. And I encourage readers in the introduction to the book to evaluate these stories with their heart. In other words, with their intuition. And if their intuition tells them that there is truth in this book, then I ask them to consider the possibility that they did plan their lives. But I would say to anyone, if your intuition tells you that pre-birth planning is not true, then by all means, go with that. I don't want to proselytize or in any way push these ideas on anyone.
Well, this must be quite extraordinary for people that know you, because you basically had what I would call a very mainstream background. You're a graduate of Dartmouth College, a psychology major, an MBA, and freelance journalist with, I guess, articles that you had in Life magazine and U.S. News and World Report. And again, as you said, you were in marketing and communications as a consultant. So here you are all of a sudden in this whole new realm, in this other world, talking about what's going on the other side. What do your friends and family think about this? What's been the feedback since you've introduced your book to the marketplace?
Well, they've been very positive, but I think in some cases they're not quite sure what to make of it. It is a very unusual concept. Many people have never considered this idea before. So some of them, I think they just, kind of pat me on the head very lovingly and provide their encouragement.
Yes.
But there are others who, unbeknownst to me before I wrote the book, who have had lifelong interest in metaphysics, and now it's given us a new interest in common, and conversations are coming up with friends and relatives that would never have occurred had I not written this book.
Yes, and that's been my experience as well. It's just like everybody comes out of the closet. It's like, I've been feeling this or curious about that, or I've always wanted to talk about it, or I didn't know where to go, and I'm so glad that, you know, you wrote your book. And yeah, all of a sudden, somebody that you've known for 10, 20, 30 years, come find out you didn't really know them at all because these were topics that you never discussed openly. And so all of a sudden, you're seeing a whole other aspect, and you have a whole new relationship for them and with them that does take you into this wonderful, wonderful, mystical, magical place that I like to spend a lot of time. And I think it's certainly important. So maybe you could tell the listeners who have not read your book a little bit about some of the people that you interviewed that you've actually discussed in there. You said you have 10, I believe, so you have quite a range of people there.
Well, the book is organized by type of life challenge, and the challenges I examine are physical illness, having handicapped children, deafness, blindness, drug addiction, alcoholism, losing a loved one, and physical accidents. And in each chapter, I interview at least one person who has experienced that particular challenge. We focus in the interview on the challenge itself, not the other areas of their lives. And then each of the interviewees has between 1 and 3 sessions with the mediums and channels in which we ask Spirit the question, did this person plan this challenge before he or she was born, and if so, why? And then I present the information that comes through. And then at the end of each story, there's a commentary by me where I try to tie it all together. So to give one example of a story, in the chapter on deafness and blindness, I spoke with Penelope, who's an African-American woman in her mid-20s, and she planned before she was born to be born completely deaf. And the reason this happened is that in her previous incarnation, the woman who is her mother in this lifetime was also her mother in that lifetime. And as a young child in the previous incarnation, Penelope heard the gunshots in which the mother's boyfriend murdered her mother. She didn't witness the murder, but she heard the gunshots, and she was quite traumatized by this, and eventually went on in that lifetime to commit suicide. So when we worked with Stacey Wells, the medium who can hear and see the pre-birth planning sessions, Stacey saw Penelope talking with her spirit guide, and the spirit guide asked her, would you prefer to be born deaf in the coming lifetime and process your healing on a subconscious level? And by being born deaf, you can ensure that you will not be traumatized in a similar way. And Penelope said, yes, this is exactly what I would like to do. And her other reason for doing this is that she wanted a lifetime in which she could express and thus know herself as compassion. So her plan was to be born deaf, develop a great deal of compassion for people who are marginalized in our society, and then go on and use that compassion to work with those people. And in fact, that's exactly what she's done. She's become a teacher to the deaf and really has fulfilled her life plan.
In reading and doing research, I'm sure you probably came across some other similar type books as far as the afterlife or previous lives or past life regression, books like Brian Weiss, Many Masters, Many Lives, authors who brought forth a lot of this information, doctors. it's really quite extraordinary, because in our society, in reading a lot of their information, the people that we look upon in our society as pitiful or sad or, you know, handicapped or things like that, really are actually, my understanding through the books that I've read, are actually more highly evolved souls, because they actually chose that kind of life and to advance their soul's growth in circumstances that most would say there's no way anybody actually chose to have that life. Someone who is severely handicapped or someone who is just an extraordinary soul on that level to actually choose it. Someone who is deaf and blind, you know, or physically handicapped, all of these things. Did you come across that in communicating with the other side or through the mediums?
That's my understanding as well. One of the stories that's in Courageous Souls is that of Jennifer Stewart, who is a single mother in Florida, and she has three children, two sons, and both of the sons have autism, although to very different degrees. One is severely autistic, the other has mild autism, and they did plan that. The story in this case is that in the previous incarnation, the two sons were in Nazi Germany, and they work in propaganda for the Nazi war machine. So when they transitioned back into spirit and had their life reviews, they felt that they had distorted truth, and they planned an incarnation in which they would be able to learn lessons in truthful communication. They selected Jennifer as their mother because at the same time as they were working in propaganda for the Nazis, Jennifer was incarnate as a crusading female journalist in this country, and she was working several years before World War II actually started to call the public's attention to what the Nazis were doing. She was traveling back and forth between New York and Washington and knocking on the doors of different politicians saying, you've got to tell the public about this. And she was patted on the head and ignored. But they knew that she had been a crusading journalist trying to bring truth to the public. And so when they planned their incarnations as autistic children in order to learn the value of truthful communication, they chose Jennifer because of her work in the previous lifetime. And they said to her, in effect, we would like you to be our mother. We would like you to be the parent who teaches us the value of truthful communication. And out of her love for them, Jennifer said, yes, I will do this for you. And that's exactly what they're doing and learning right now.
Mm-hmm. Again, there's, you know, several books, doctors who have done this. Dr. Michael Newton was one of them, A Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls. And again, talks about how, you know, there's young souls and then there's more advanced souls who actually choose this. So in your research and with working with the mediums and channels who come up with this information, what is the ultimate goal of all of these incarnations? Where are we going? I understand that, you know, you're trying to move forward or advance it, but how many incarnations are we going to have? How many times do we do this? Is there a pattern or not? Excuse me, a pattern, but is there a reason for this? Where are we going with it? What is the actual process?
Well, the average person will have hundreds, if not somewhere in the thousands, of incarnations. The reason for doing this is that in the non-physical realm that we come from, it really is very much as it is classically portrayed, a realm of great love and light, joy, peace, and harmony. In a realm such as that, we experience no contrast to ourselves, and because we experience no contrast to ourselves, we can't fully know or appreciate ourselves. Now, what I found in my research is that souls are love, and by that I mean quite literally we are made of the energy of love. Not only are we loving, but we are love quite literally. So in this realm of peace and harmony, we experience no contrast to ourselves as love, and therefore we don't fully know or understand ourselves. So by planning incarnations in the physical realm, a realm of duality, in other words, up and down, hot and cold, left and right, good and bad, this is a realm in which we experience great contrast to ourselves on a daily basis. And if we can awaken and come to know that we are love and learn how to give love and receive love unconditionally, from the soul's perspective, this results in a much more profound self-knowing, And the suffering that we encounter through life challenges is very temporary, very brief from the soul's perspective. But the more profound self-knowing of ourselves as love is something that we take back to our souls, and it becomes part of the soul literally for all eternity.
Well, thank you for that explanation. That certainly helps to know that there is a purpose to all of this. For those who are just joining us, this is Gina Jones. You're listening to Flying Higher, and this evening we have Robert Schwartz with us, author of Courageous Souls, Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth? And you can find out more information about Robert's book at www.courageoussouls.com. And Robert, do you have an email address that you want to give out or a phone number they can contact you specifically?
Yes, they can reach me at author@courageoussouls.com or 1-800-742-0148.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. And I do want people to know that the mediums and the channels that you've used in your research for your book, the contact information is on your website if anybody would like to explore that for themselves or other family members and to find out what challenges they've signed up for, if they don't already know, and how to use those in a beneficial way. Because I know it's very easy when we're in these challenges in our soul groups with our family or friends or whoever signed up to help us with our progress to, you know, get caught up in blame and anger and hate and resentment, not understanding the higher purpose of what we've signed up for. So I encourage people to contact your resources for this amazing book. And I have to admit, you're a courageous person to do so because, again, this is sort of outside of the realm that most people can consider. And at this point, we'd like to have any callers who'd like to call in this evening. You can speak with Robert and answer any questions that you may have. Also, there's an analogy that you have in your book, Robert, that I think is very good, and it takes it maybe just a little bit more it makes it a little bit more understandable for the listeners, and especially for people who've never understood this concept or even heard of this concept. And that was when you were talking about music and the fact of why we would come and experience a lot of pain and anguish in hardship in the incarnation here on the planet. You talked about the music. I thought that was very good. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Well, the analogy I use in the book, and this is where I'm explaining why we incarnate and why we plan life challenges, it comes back to the idea that the realm of heaven, to use that term, is again one of love and light and peace and joy. So I compare the soul to the most beautiful music that anyone has ever heard, and I compare heaven to the place where that music is playing. And I say, if you've only known this incredibly exquisite music and you've never heard any other music, then you can't fully appreciate what you're hearing because you have nothing to compare it to. So if you want to have some basis for comparison so that you can fully appreciate that exquisite music, what can you do? Well, one thing would be to leave your eternal home and go to a place where there's another type of music, perhaps something that's not quite as beautiful, and then you would have some basis for comparison. But you can do even more than that. You could go to another place and you could forget what the music of home sounded like, and then through experiences like life challenges that trigger an awakening, if you started to compose that music yourself in your new home and you recreated the symphonies of heaven on the physical plane after having forgotten what they sounded like, that would be the way to get the most profound knowing and the most profound appreciation for the music of home. So I believe that that's what we're doing here. We're recomposing the symphonies of home by learning to express love on the physical plane after we've forgotten that love is our very nature. And so when we transition back into spirit, we will take with us for all eternity a much deeper knowing of our nature as love.
I think that's a wonderful example, and again, I think it's quite understandable and tangible for people to think of it in that way. I think that is very clear, and it certainly helped me when I began reading your book. One of the people that you interviewed or highlight in the book had an amazing, I guess you call it an accident, the one that was in the mailroom.
You're referring to Christina.
Yes. Could you just tell us a little bit about that? Because, again, to read something like that is so extraordinary, and yet I think it's very important for people to understand about accidents.
Christina is one of two people in the chapter on accidents, and it's difficult to believe this, but she actually planned before she was born to be the quote-unquote victim of a bomb explosion, and she sat down with the soul who was going to plant the bomb, and she agreed to be present when the bomb exploded. So what happened is that in 1969, when she was in her early 20s, she was working as an administrative assistant at Pomona College in Southern California. She went to the basement mailboxes to retrieve her employer's mail, and there was a pipe bomb in the mailbox. When she touched it, it detonated. It hurled her back 10 feet against a concrete wall. 6-foot splinters of wood were shot like arrows into the wall behind her. Her face and a large portion of her body were scorched by the flames. Both eardrums were damaged. She lost a couple of fingers. And in the months to come, she ended up having 10 different surgeries to try to repair the damage that the bomb had caused. Now, the reason she wanted to have this experience is that she wanted to be a healer in this lifetime. And she knew coming into this life that the best way for her to become a healer would be to heal herself first and then take the wisdom and the compassion that she developed during her self-healing and turn that outward and offer it in service to humanity on a large scale. And this is exactly what she's done. After she recovered from the bomb explosion, she went back to school. She earned a PhD in speech language pathology. And now she is a very, very gifted healer. She actually has the ability on an energetic level to go into a patient's brain and bring about changes neurologically that restore language capabilities. It's really an extraordinary talent that she has. And the only way that she could have developed this kind of healing ability was to heal herself first. So the suffering that she went through, you know, from the perspective of the personality was very, very great, very intense. And it's difficult for us, when we're incarnate, to understand why anyone would want to go through that. But from the soul perspective, her suffering was very brief and transitory, and yet the healing that she's bringing about in the world is a gift of immense value to humanity. And she's having the experience of knowing herself as unconditional love and compassion, and this is exactly the experience that the soul seeks on the physical plane.
Again, when I read that, I was like, wow. But again, I've always said there are no things such as an accident. But it is truly amazing that somebody would go, yeah, I'll do that, sure, let me sign up for that, and then you come down to earth and do it, thinking, oh my gosh. Truly are courageous souls. And your communication with the other side through the mediums and channels, have they said to you why this information is coming out now in the last, you know, year or the last decade or so about the fact that we have other lives and past lives, future lives? Is there a plan? Is there a reason for this being revealed at this point in time?
Well, I believe what's happening in the world today is that we're just at the cusp of a worldwide spiritual awakening. And by awakening, I mean in part that we are making a shift from identifying ourselves as personalities and physical bodies to identifying ourselves as divine eternal souls. So I think that this great awakening is just beginning to occur, and I hope and I believe that the work that I'm doing and that many others are doing as well will facilitate that sort of a shift. So one of the main purposes of my book, beyond helping people to see deeper meaning in their life challenges, is to say to people, you are not your body, and in fact, you are not even the personality that you adopted for this one incarnation. You are not your faults. You are not your perceived limitations. You are a holy, eternal soul. And I think as people start to awaken and define themselves in those terms, and particularly when they define themselves as loving souls, we will see much greater compassion and unconditional love on a global scale, and it will really transform the world that we live in.
In your communications, did you discover or was there any indication that there may be forces, if you will, that are of the dark side, not of the light, who are actually not wanting us to have this spiritual awakening, or there may be some resistance to this for us to know who we are and why we're here?
That's a very good question. The topic of evil is one that, for the most part, I'm putting off to a future book in the Courageous Soul series. But one thing I will say to you on that subject is that, you know, when we're incarnate, we play roles that appear by human standards to be evil. And yet the souls who play those roles are not themselves evil. They're just playing a part in this particular lifetime. And what I've seen in my research is that when those souls return to spirit, they are generally just as compassionate and loving as any other soul. For example, in Penelope's story, the deaf woman we were speaking of earlier, in her pre-birth planning session, the soul who murdered her mother in the previous lifetime is there. And he actually stands up early on in the planning session and he says, I will not incarnate when you, Penelope, and your mother incarnate. The reason he volunteers not to incarnate at the same time is that he believes it will be easier for Penelope to achieve the healing that she's seeking in this lifetime if he's not present on Earth at the same time. Now, consider what's happening there. In the previous life, this soul committed a murder. So from the human perspective, we would condemn this person. We would say, this person is bad, this person is evil, this person should be punished. But on the soul level, in the pre-birth planning session, he agrees to, in effect, defer his own learning and growth by not incarnating. So it's an act of service to Penelope, it's an act of service to her mother, and in this planning session, he is just as unconditionally loving and compassionate as Penelope or her mother or any other soul who's present. So I would encourage people not to make judgments based upon actions that happen in the physical plane, because what's happening here is really very misleading. And it's just roles that we're playing, but on the soul level, even the souls that commit murder are loving.
Yes, and in my own research is indicated the same as well. And yet that's very hard to convey to someone who, in fact, you know, is not aware of this. And even if you had that own your experience yourself of someone in your family being murdered, it's hard to realize that you're on a stage and we are playing roles and this is the script that we've signed up for. This is the story we're to play out and to sort of separate ourselves. I think the movie The Matrix certainly helped me a lot in understanding how we're sort of plugged into a story and we're sort of going by and doing what we're supposed to do, not realizing that there's actually a lot bigger play going on. I think many, many times, I don't know if you've ever thought of this, but it's like we are on a stage, and then there are the people in the audience that we can't see because the lights are so bright, and we're the ones who are playing it out right now, who are behind the curtain or on the wings or out in the audience who are, you know, cheering us on, who are watching this. And yet there are some of us who take our roles way too seriously. And I think your information in your book will certainly help people lighten up a little bit and realize, you know, some of the decisions and some of the things that they do, what's based on, is really inaccurate. I know our criminal system certainly could use a little revamping if this kind of information was shared with people, especially when it comes to capital punishment. I don't know. So you were talking about another book. Is this a trilogy, or what plans do you have?
I think there will be at least three books in the series. The topic of evil will probably not come up until book three. Book two, which I'm working on now, will be very similar to the first Courageous Souls book, but it will examine a different set of life challenges. But basically, it will be very much the same as the first book.
So how has this changed you? And it was almost 4 years ago, 4 years and, what, a week ago, or maybe not even that long, that you went through this. So how has it transformed you?
I think it's changed the way I think of myself. It's changed my self-identity. We were talking just a moment ago about making a shift from personality, body consciousness, to soul consciousness. And I think that I am in the process of making that. I don't feel that I'm completely there yet, and it's going to be an ongoing process. But I think it's well underway. And in the past, I might very well have defined myself by what I thought were my limitations or my faults in this lifetime. And I don't look at myself that way anymore. I think of myself much more as an eternal soul. And by doing so, it brings about the very sort of effect that you just talked about. It makes life lighter. It reduces suffering when we are during times of challenge. And I think it also helps me to be a more loving, more compassionate, and much less judgmental person. I think when I was younger, I probably judged people much more frequently and much more harshly than I do now, which is not to say that I've completely moved beyond judgment, but I'm certainly much more aware of it, and I'm aware that people are playing roles in my life and in the lives of other people that I care about, roles that were scripted before birth at the request of those people so that they could learn certain lessons and grow in certain ways. And because I'm aware of that, it really makes me a more tolerant person.
Well, that has certainly played over for me, although there are days that, you know, we do get challenged when someone cuts you off in the car in traffic or something like that. Like, all of a sudden you sort of revert back to, you know, what you knew before or how you behaved before, and then you try to bring back your spiritual part of yourself and go, okay, you know, this is part of the lesson. This is what I'm here to learn, and apply that to everyday life. And I know my boyfriend and I laugh sometimes because we look around and we're thinking, okay, and what is the purpose of this person or what they're doing? And, you know, I gently remind them sometimes, okay, we're all manifestations of the Creator. We're all equal. We're all here for a purpose. We all have a role to play in this drama down here on Earth. But some days you have to scratch your heads going, you know, okay, what was that about? What did we sign up for? You have to maintain a sense of humor about all of this. And I know certainly the Creator must have a great sense of humor when he picked me to do the work that I'm doing. So it's interesting how we get chosen for this. Or I guess if we really understand what you're saying and conveying in the book, we actually chose it ourselves. It's very, very interesting.
I don't believe that absolutely everything is planned, but I do see in my research that our greatest challenges are almost always planned, and when we're aware of that, as you say, we can approach them with a sense of humor, and that really makes all the difference.
Now, with all of the earth changes that are going on, I mean, there's fires everywhere, you know, there's all the climatic changes that are occurring, that are intensifying. My book in particular talks about the Mayan calendar. There's a lot of scientific research that is pointing to 2012 as a pivotal year in humanity's history, and this is also in a lot of ancient prophecies. Is any of this information come forward for you? Anything about an ascension, or I think you referred to it as a spiritual awakening? Does that particular year come up in your research?
Well, I'll tell you honestly, I purposely chose not to use the word ascension in my book, because I would like the book to reach the mainstream, and ascension really is beyond the scope of what I'm writing about here, and I thought it might be too much for book one. But I will tell you that in my own conversations with spirit and through the mediums and through the channels, early on I would frequently ask what was going to happen with ascension, and I asked specifically if it was going to happen in 2012. And every time I asked this question, I was given a different date. I would be told 2012, then 2008, then 2016. And when I asked why the date was changing, they said because the collective consciousness is highly variable and the ascension will occur whenever the collective consciousness is ready for it. But because the date kept changing every time I asked the question, eventually I simply stopped asking it. And so I do believe that something quite significant is going to happen. But will it be in 2012 or another year? I don't know the answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a year that's just sort of a pinpoint, but I truly believe that we'll be all called at different times in different situations, that it's not necessarily one, you know, period of 365 days, but it will be over a range of time. But it certainly seems like something is going on because of just the fact that physically we can see it, and I think everybody can sense it. And the time does seem to be flying faster. It does seem like it's compressing, and everybody feels getting squeezed and a little unnerved. And yet, my understanding is that as we are moving forward, and as the vibrations maybe are changing, that these abilities to see the other side or to see other dimensions and to become more psychic or more intuitive will actually happen as the veil thins. Have you come across any of that information in your research?
I have not asked about that specifically in my research, but I will tell you from personal experience, I do believe that that's exactly what is happening. There are certain days on which, for me personally, the veil is quite thin, and I feel almost as though I could reach out and touch non-physical beings. And I know others who very recently have had quite profound metaphysical experiences talking with loved ones in spirit. And so I think that experiences like this are becoming more commonplace. A lot of people have a vague intuitive sense that something quite significant is happening, and they're not quite sure what it is, but they feel at some level, perhaps subconscious or at a level that can't quite be articulated, that something quite profound is happening. And I think as we move forward in the years to come, more and more people will have this sense. The veils will continue to get thinner and thinner. And at some point, people will, I think, start to develop a little bit of telepathy, and many people will start to develop psychic abilities. And these sorts of abilities that the mediums and channels in my book have, which are relatively rare now, I think will become much more common.
Mm-hmm. And what about the children? Any information we hear about indigo children, crystal children now? What have you gained any information about the children, or maybe even some of the children that were people that were in the books in your studies, the 10 families that you were with?
I didn't set out to examine that specifically, but there was one particular case that I researched which did not appear in the book, but I'll tell you a little bit about it. This was a woman who I was interviewing for the chapter on accidents, and she had had a number of car accidents over a period of years that they kept recurring and recurring and recurring. And she told me an interesting story, which was that shortly before the very first accident occurred, it was during the summer, and she was at a swimming pool with her young daughter, who I think was about maybe 8 or 9, 10 years old. And the daughter got out of the pool, walked up to her, and just out of the blue said to her, "You're not waking up. You're not learning the lessons that you agreed to learn before you were born. And so something bad is going to have to happen to you to wake you up." Well, as you can imagine, this woman was flabbergasted, and it was shortly after her daughter told this to her that these car accidents started to occur. So I think in this case we have a child who probably is a crystal or an indigo, and she understood quite clearly what was going on there in regard to pre-birth planning and pre-birth lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, there's certainly so much to explore. Now, the people that were in your book, they have an understanding now that they have guidance, that they have planning, and that there are spirits and family members who are supporting them from the other side in their journey with their challenges. Do they now feel a communication? Do they now sense that these beings are there, whereas maybe before they never did, before you contacted them?
I think some of them do. I think others have not had that experience yet. But to give you one example, in the chapter on death of a loved one, I tell the story of Valerie, who planned before birth to lose two loved ones in this lifetime. One was a fiancé who actually was killed in a tragic diving accident 48 hours after they got engaged. And she also lost her only child, Dustin, when he was in his teens to an accidental drug overdose. And through one of the mediums, we spoke with both the fiancé and her child and asked, what was this plan? And basically, in this case, both of them wanted short incarnations. They had certain lessons that they felt they could learn in a short period of time. And then they wanted to transition back into spirit. And Valerie, out of her love for the fiancé and for her son, agreed to be in their lives and have them in her life even though she knew that she was going to lose them. Well, since her son Dustin returned to spirit, Valerie has been in communication with him several times on her own, and even had an experience once where she lifted out of her body briefly and felt that she was in communion with her son in spirit. So I think that as the vibration is raised, more and more people will start to be able to have communications like this with their loved ones who have returned to the non-physical realm.
Yes, I certainly agree with that. And I don't know if this is occurring with you, but my dreams now are becoming quite vivid and very real. And I wake up in the morning exhausted. It's like I've been, you know, in a movie for the whole night. And it's like more and more is coming to me. Are you sensing that, or do you get that from people that you talk to as far as dreams?
Well, I had an interesting experience myself with dreams when I first started researching Courageous Souls. I experimented with communicating with my higher self before I went to sleep, and I would pose a particular question and then request that the answer to the question come to me in my dream. And I would also request that I be able to remember the dream or the answer portion of it. And this is something that I'd never been able to do before, because I always had forgotten my dreams when I woke up. But when I started actually making a specific request and asking specific questions, they were answered in dreams. And I did, in fact, remember the dreams when I awoke the next morning. And I haven't experimented with this in quite some time now, but when I first started to write the book, I posed these questions, you know, every night for a couple of weeks, and sure enough, I was able to get answers in my dreams.
Well, that's been happening with me. Sometimes it takes a day or two to figure it out, because it's visual, you know, and there's not a lot of words or anything, so you have to interpret it. And sometimes the books on dreams can be a little confusing, and you have to learn what your own messages are to yourself and interpret that as well. Some of them have been quite prophetic, and I think, I don't know if it's your higher self that's communicating that, or, you know, I've heard my name mentioned, you know, and wake up, or it's like I hear the phone ring, but the phone didn't ring, things like that. So I think sometimes the other side can use that as well to communicate with us. And it's certainly fun to explore. And, of course, this is all the same in the fact that it's hard to prove any of this, just like I can't prove to you I had a dream last night. How can I prove to anybody that I had a dream? So, again, this is a lot of it is just based on your own knowing, your own intuition, and your own ability to understand this, and by faith, to explore this unseen. What is the saying that seeing is, for some people, seeing is believing, and then for others, believing is seeing? So it's interesting to see it how it plays out, Robert. Again, for those who are just joining us, this is Gina Jones. You're listening to Flying Higher here on BBS Radio Late Night. And I have Robert Schwartz with me, who is the author of Courageous Souls. Do we plan our life challenges before book? I mean, excuse me, before birth. I'm looking at your book. I apologize. It's a wonderful book, and it's a great read, and it's very, very moving, and certainly something that I encourage people to purchase. You can get that at www.courageoussouls.com. And do you have a date on when your next book will be coming out?
I don't have a specific date. I think it will probably be a year and a half to 2 years from now.
So are you doing this full-time, or are you still working in the communications marketing business?
No, I'm doing this full-time. I feel that this is my pre-birth plan, was to write a series of books about pre-birth planning. And I feel that it's my higher purpose, my calling in life, and it's far more fulfilling and joyful for me than the work I used to do, and I really have no desire to return to that life.
Well, I certainly understand that. I feel the same way about mine. I feel like I'm a messenger here to, you know, help waken people up to the reality of who they are and why they're here. And you certainly opened the door to the other side for people to do that, and with your contacts, it's really been quite an extraordinary journey for yourself. But how do you turn some of this off? Do you have any hobbies or things that you like to do? Have you changed a lot of things, like your understanding of nature or maybe the way you eat, stuff like that?
Well, nature has always played a primary role in my life, and I find that by going out into nature, it actually helped me to write the book because I was able to quiet my mind and I think raise my own vibration and commune with spirit in a way that would not be possible if I just stayed indoors and sat behind a computer all day. But I love going out into nature. I live in southern Oregon, and I'm surrounded by pine trees and mountains and deer, and it's a very important part of my life here. And you asked about eating. I do eat meat, but I have really developed much healthier eating habits since embarking on this path. And I think that's part of keeping one's vibration high as well. And actually, I often bless food now before I eat it, which is something I would never have even thought of doing just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Do the beings on the other side, through your research, do they convey an overall message to humanity through you, through your book, that the listeners should hear about?
I would say that the bottom line message is that they see us as great beings. And, you know, there are many non-physical beings who never have a physical incarnation. They know how difficult it is here. And there are also many beings in the non-physical realm who have had physical incarnations, and so they know from first-hand experience just how difficult it can be here. So I hear again and again references to how courageous we are, which is why I chose that as the title for the book, references to what great beings we are. And, you know, had I not done this research and had I just heard it in personal sessions with mediums, I'm not sure that I would have believed it entirely. But having spoken with so many non-physical consciousnesses at this point and having done this kind of research, I can tell your listeners that we really are regarded throughout the universe as great beings, as very courageous beings. And when they tell me that this is how we're viewed, they really mean it. We are revered throughout the universe for having the courage to take on physical incarnations that can be extraordinarily difficult while we're incarnate. And so I would say to your listeners, think of yourself and think of the others in your life with the same respect and admiration that non-physical beings think of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard that as well. And and a lot of the research that I did for my own book, it seems like this physical place, being in this third dimensional existence, is very heavy. It's very, very hard. It's very dense. And when we get past that veil of forgetting, it's like, whoom, you're in it. They're like kind of difficult to do anything but what we signed up to do. So in your understanding and your communication and all your research, do you see that in fact there are no mistakes? There are no accidents, really.
I think that's true. There are really only two ways that something can happen. One is that we plan it before we're born, or we draw it to us vibrationally after we're here, even if it's not part of our plan. But either way, there's no mistake, there's no accident, there's no coincidence, and everything is happening in divine perfection. It doesn't seem that way from a human perspective because there is so much suffering involved in most physical incarnations. But from the soul level perspective, it's true. There are no mistakes. Everything is always in divine order. And everything that we are experiencing ultimately is for our highest and greatest good.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of terms that are used a lot, especially in the spiritual metaphysical realms. One of them is free will. Now, we get into some wonderful discussions about free will, because I think free will happens on the other side, and that was where you chose to be here, and after that, you can forget it. It's like you've got a script. It's like you've got a role that you've signed up for, and it's pretty hard to get out of it unless you are of the mindset of a Buddha or someone who is just able to transcend the physical. What is your interpretation or what's been given to you as far as the definition of what is free will?
Well, in my research, what I've seen is that there are certain parameters that are put into place before we're born that you can't really do much about once you're here. For example, the location where you're born, the parents that you're born to, those decisions are all made before we incarnate. So you could not exercise your free will to be born somewhere else or choose other parents. But I do believe that we have a great range of freedom within these parameters, and you can choose to deviate from the life script if you really want to. Now, in my opinion, it's not advisable to do that, partly because you've set up agreements. We've all set up agreements to be of service to others in certain ways, and so to help others learn their lessons and grow, we need to play the roles that we scripted with them before we were born. But it's also not in our best interest to deviate from the pre-birth plan, because the parameters that we set up are there for our own growth, for our own learning, and so we can choose to try to skirt around those if we want to, but our guides are working to ensure that we have the experiences that we agreed to have before we were born. And that's why very often people notice that in their lives there are certain recurring patterns. People will say that the same kind of challenge keeps coming up again and again. And very often when that happens, it's because the people are not learning the lessons that they wanted to learn from the challenge. And in that case, very often the challenge will become more severe each time it comes back. And it's almost as though the universe is hitting us over the head with a cosmic 2x4 and saying, you know, learn this. This lesson is here for your own benefit, for your own growth. So to try to skirt it really would not be advisable. And if someone did succeed in doing that, once they got returned to spirit and had their life review, I don't think that's something that they would be pleased about. They would be more likely to feel they had missed out an opportunity for personal growth and then set up another incarnation to work on the very same thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other term, and this is, we're using the word challenges here that we've set out in the soul groups, the people that are in our lives, is where does karma come in? What is your definition of karma? What has been explained to you? And is that what we're talking about here?
Karma plays a very important role in pre-birth planning. I conceive of karma as unbalanced energy. To take a simple example, two people might have had a previous incarnation in which one person was physically ill and the other person was the caretaker. Now, when those two souls return to spirit and review their lives, there will be a sense of unbalanced energy, and they will be motivated to plan another incarnation in which they balance the energy. The easiest way to do that would be to reverse the roles. So the person who was physically ill now becomes the caretaker. The caretaker now becomes the person with physical illness. And in that next incarnation, that gives them an opportunity to balance the energy. But what makes it all so interesting and so challenging is that once in body, neither of those two souls is going to remember the pre-birth agreement. So the person who is now physically ill may feel angry about or burdened by the illness. The person who is in the caretaker role may feel angry about or burdened by the need to take care of another individual. And so the challenge there is to, once again, provide unconditional love and compassion in very difficult circumstances in order to balance the karma. But what's really important, I think, to point out here about karma is that although it may feel like a punishment from the human perspective, it's not. It's a neutral, impersonal law of the universe, very much like gravity. So, for example, if you were to trip and fall, you wouldn't blame gravity. You wouldn't feel victimized by gravity. You would not say, gravity is punishing me. It wouldn't make any sense to say that. And
right.
By the same token, it doesn't make any sense to say that about karma. It's just a law of the universe, just like gravity.
Well, yes, and people do say that, and I always wonder when they're saying, well, you're creating negative karma, you know, you're creating bad karma. But if you have agreed to play a certain role with someone, that may not look like, quote, a nice person or a nice situation, but that's what you agreed to. How does one know if you're actually creating bad karma or not creating karma? So it's like, yeah, you know, because you may have signed up to be the thorn in their side, and not, but then you were thinking, well, I'm on this spiritual path. I have to be a really, really good person. I have to be a really, really good person. I can't do anything bad. So then you don't. So then maybe in some ways, I mean, can you outlive your karma? Can you have actually that kind of control over it, not knowing that you're trying to when, in fact, you're not supposed to? I know that sounds kind of mixed up, but...
That's a very complex question. I think what happens many times with the negative roles that you're talking about is that if the person plays the role just as it was scripted, then there is no accruing of additional karma. But frequently, in a state of forgetfulness, people will go beyond what was scripted and they'll carry the negative role too far. And in those cases, there is an accruing of additional karma.
But we really never know, though, do we? What degree we're supposed to be doing any of this stuff until we get to the other side.
With our logical minds, we don't know that. And again, that's why I think it comes back to intuition. I think the best way to address these questions is on an intuitive level. And go with sort of a feeling knowing of, you know, what is right, what is wrong.
Right. Now, in your research and, again, in your communications, has there been anything conveyed to you about the planetary influences, about our astrology, about our numerology, about our destiny cards or the archetypes that we've signed up to be in this, you know, great play on Earth? The cast of characters, because I look at my horoscope some days, Rob, and I'm thinking, this is not my life. It's written here, right here in black and white. This is what was supposed to happen today, and at the end of the day, I'm looking at it going, oh, my God, that's exactly what happened. So it's like, okay, how did that come about?
These are not things that I've examined in the course of my research. I do believe very much in astrology and very much in numerology, and from the reading that I've done personally, I think these are quite significant fields of study, but again, it's not something that I've looked at personally in my study of pre-birth planning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything here that you would like to share with listeners that we haven't touched on, or anything more about some of the people in your book that you would like to share with them? Because they are certainly extraordinary people.
Well, I would just say to the listeners that if anyone is interested in sharing their story for book two, please contact me. I'd like to talk to people who have faced financial challenges, poverty, racism, immigration, gambling addictions, who have fought in wars, who have been adopted when they were children, challenges in intimate relationships, caretaking challenges, if anyone has cared for, say, a loved one with Alzheimer's for a number of years. These are some of the topics I'd like to explore in the second book. And if anyone is interested in sharing their story, they can do so anonymously. They don't have to use their real name in the book. And again, they can contact me through the website at www.courageoussouls.com or at author@courageoussouls.com.
Okay, great. Well, that's... wonderful, wonderful messages that are in there, that are contained in your book, Courageous Souls, Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth? Certainly a lot to talk about and a lot to think and ponder about. And do you feel like in the people that you have in your book that this information has helped them, that they feel more at ease in what they're doing, that there's an understanding that now brings a calmness or, I don't know, making sense of their lives?
I think in many cases that's true, and I'll give you one example. In the chapter on physical illness, I tell the story of John Elmore, who planned before he was born to have AIDS. And in this lifetime, John contracted AIDS from a former romantic partner. As you can imagine, when he was diagnosed with AIDS and realized that his partner had given him this illness, he was filled with rage, and that continued for quite some time, for a number of years. But now that John understands and really believes that the AIDS experience was something he himself set up before he was born, he's been able to forgive the former romantic partner, and his level of forgiveness really is quite profound, and it would not have been possible, really, had he not come to understand pre-birth planning.
Mm-hmm. I could see how that would definitely make a difference. Well, it's extraordinary information, and I'm so thrilled to have had you on the show this evening to share this with our listeners, and I'm sure this will really help so many people. Again, this is sort of the same information that I have in my book, that you again, you brought forth factual situations where mine are more fictional. And I think at some point in time there may be an opportunity for you and I to work together on this, because my book is also going to be a trilogy. And I think it's more helpful to people to know that a lot of this stuff is real, that it isn't made up, and that there are actual people behind these stories. So I look forward to finding out more about where you're going with this, and I'm going to be starting on my second book as well, and working on also the script and the screenplay for the movie part of it. So I think there's some extraordinary opportunities available to us individually and to everybody collectively in the days ahead. So Robert, I thank you so much for being with us this evening on Flying Higher here on BBS Radio Late Night. And next week we have an extraordinary person who is going to be with us, is Shelley Yates, and she must too must be a courageous soul, because she has had an extraordinary life up to this point, and she is going to be with us talking about Fire the Grid. And she and many millions of people around the world are going to be firing the grid, activating the Earth grid on July 17th, and she'll be talking to us about that next week here on Flying Higher on Sunday, May 20th, so we ask that you join us. You can get more information about Shelley on the Flying Higher website. It's www.flying-higher.com, and Shelley will be sharing her extraordinary story with us. And then in June 27th, we'll have Carol O'Connell with us, and again, you can find out more information about Carol, and she is authored a book called The Power of Choice. So again, we bring forth people who are enlightening everyone and helping us to fly higher into the future and into the week ahead and into the next dimension. So thank you and good night. I appreciate everyone being with us tonight. Thank you, Robert, and we'll talk with you soon. Bye-bye. Good night, everyone.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Flying Higher with Gina Jones, heard every Sunday night here on BBS Radio Late Night. Gina's latest book, Flying Between Heaven and Earth, is now available at Amazon.com. Join us next Sunday at 7:30 Pacific for another enlightening discussion on Flying Higher.